The theater had been a fixture of the main drag in Bloomington, Indiana, since 1922. It is and was iconic, with a huge marquee sign lined with those massive light bulbs all along it, a big flashy sign above it that said Indiana in tall red letters. The theater had been well loved for decades, but more recently it had struggled to compete with the big movie chains and had fallen into disrepair. For a while, it seemed all but certain that it would close and stay closed. But incredibly, the community rallied. Donors were found large and small, and the theater was restored to its former beauty. The first time that I went there was a December night, not long after it reopened, and everyone was still overjoyed to be back. That night was one of absolute wonder and delight. It was this wide-ranging show involving all kinds of local artists. There were musicians and tap dancers, a cappella numbers and tumblers. There was a world-class hammer dulcimer player, and there were papier-mâché puppets towering above the human beings who made them twirl across the stage. It was the kind of show that leaves the whole crowd in awe, laughing at the beauty and with tears streaming down our faces at the joy of it all. I loved every minute of it. But it was after the show that my heart was set on fire. This crowd of hundreds spilled out of the theater and into the street, which had been closed to cars. And there in the center of the street, an enormous limestone table had been set up, because it's Indiana. A huge limestone table, completely impractical and made specially for this occasion. And on that table were dozens of pies, hundreds of pies, all baked by the same crowd and brought to cheer the night. It was cold and dark, but we stood in the street grinning and whooping it up and eating lots of pie. The table was so big that we could all take turns sidling up and leaning against it while poring over the options for the next slice. There was plenty of pie and plenty of room for everyone. Today is an unusual day for the church. It's one in which we celebrate an idea rather than a story. Trinity Sunday. This is why we have, it seems like a bit of an odd collection of scripture passages, chosen presumably because they each talk about these different facets of God and how they come to interact with one another. In some ways, it feels like we are grasping at straws here. And I get it. Grasping at straws may be the best we've got. The idea of the Trinity is one that people have wrestled with and debated, written about, and spilled blood over for a very, very long time. There have been endless attempts to explain the Trinity, to simplify it, to prove it. But at its core, the idea that God is both three and one, it is pure mystery. Try as we might to name how we've encountered the immanence of God as creator, as spirit, as the incarnate one in Jesus, still the idea of the Trinity exists far beyond our words. No wonder that this preaching slot is so often kicked to the seminarian. But we still wrestle, and still we reach. There's something about this God of ours who shows up in different ways and beckons us in, compelling us to reach at least in the direction of understanding, even if we know we will never get there. The prophet Isaiah tells us that this is the God who's so incredible that even just the hem of the robe of God fills the whole temple with wonder. God doesn't have to be there in their midst, nor even God's whole robe. Just the hem is enough to set the whole place aglow. This is the level of beauty that we're talking about. And it's the same idea in the gospel today as Nicodemus searches and flails, displaying such longing and also such lovable confusion. He's a religious leader. He knows that it would be bad news if people were to see him associating with this rabble-rouser. But he's caught a glimpse of something that makes life worth living, something that he suspects will bring him more fully alive. He's seen the signs that Jesus has been performing, signs of healing, signs of freedom, signs of abundant life. And he knows that they have something to do with God. He has to know more. And so he comes under the cover of night, longing to wrestle and learn and hoping maybe to find something, hoping maybe to encounter someone, encounter the Holy One. Isaiah and Nicodemus and so many more have been grappling like this for ages. One of the most enduring examples of this wrestling with the nature of God comes to us in the form of an icon, written by the Russian iconographer Andrei Rublev some 500 years ago, that's been replicated truly countless times since then. In it, Rublev depicts the Trinity as three angels in a nod to the story of Abraham hosting three strangers, even as he himself was living in a strange new land. Still, he welcomes them in and feeds them, not knowing that they were really messengers of God. Rublev then takes this story a step further in the icon, suggesting that these three are themselves the Trinity. In the icon, the faces of these three angels are nearly identical, but they're dressed in different colors. The Father is in gold, the Son in blue, and the Spirit in green, full of new life. It's a bit challenging to decipher, but as the icon is traditionally explained, the Father looks to the Son, and the Son gazes back at the Father, but is pointing to the Spirit. And the Spirit looks at the Father, but with one hand points to the Son, and then with the other opens up the circle, making space for others to come to the table. The three are deeply, intimately engaged with each other. And they're also making room for us to enter in. The circle is not closed off. The table is not full. There's room to pull up a chair and dive right into the feast with them. The icon is left so open that from our vantage point, it seems like there will always be room to stretch the table longer and wider and add more people in. It's beautiful. I cherish this image. And all of it can feel a little overwhelming at times. The beauty of the Holy Feast is so immense that I find myself wondering where even to start, or how to join in, how we might help create that here and now. The same is true as I think back on that glorious night of theater and pie In my mind, the whole scene is just massive. When I close my eyes and remember that show, the theater carries the radiance of the Orpheum or Davies Hall. When I recall the table outside covered in pie, it is so long that I wonder if maybe it even continued on out of sight. And I wonder, is it possible that there were also lanterns floating in the sky? It's that kind of memory. That's the impact that night had on me. That's the place it holds in my heart, one of magic and wonder. It's easy to take a wonderful thing and let it be stretched almost beyond our grasp. It starts to loom so large that we can't begin to think about bringing something similar to life again. But then last month, I was back in Bloomington. And while we were there, my daughter Alice and I, we went to hear a concert of one of the university's jazz bands at this very theater. We walked in, and I was surprised by how intimate it was. Looking around, it was more the size of a theater at DVC than the symphony in San Francisco. It was beautiful, and it was good, but it was not beyond our reach. The beauty I saw, it was close at hand. Realizing this did not diminish the wonder of that night 25 years ago. If anything, it magnified the magic of it and spilled the beauty further out in every direction. The gorgeous hospitality I experienced that cold December night, it was not too grand for us to find within ourselves again. It did not belong only to a spectacular show and a sweeping feast. It belongs to us, now, always. We, too, can find space at the table, create space at the table. We can stroll up for a big slice of pie. Just as Abraham, under the shade of oak trees far from any home he'd ever known, finds this mysterious God arriving. And just as into the winter nights of Indiana, still there she comes, spreading out pies for every last person in sight. And just the same, the Holy One comes here and now in whatever grand or humble space we have to offer. God comes, gathering around the table, opening space, and inviting us to join the feast.